John Von Wright, beginning the visit with Suzanne, her report on the Hobarts, her first day here, Thursday the 17th of April, for August 71, Thursday the 17th of August 72, at supper, after supper. John Von Wright, beginning of Suzanne's report on the Hobarts, her first day here, after supper, Thursday the 17th of August 72. John Von Wright, beginning of Suzanne's report on the Hobarts, her first day here, after supper, Thursday, the 17th of August, 72. Suzanne's report on the Hobarts, her first day here, Thursday, after supper, the 17th of August, 72.
Mr. Chadwick,
kill
him dead, boy. But they got on, Mr. Lyons called in for me. And we had a time that day. We would see Mr. Pinkham and Mr. Chadwick. And they all say give him a tetanus and 40 cc's of Combiotic.
Uh-huh.
Well, Chadwick says I'd help, but I don't like giving horses a shot. And I go, well, I can give a horse a shot.
You had.
We didn't have any needles or anything, so he gave me one of those cow needles. With a syringe and all, and I came back, and Jim looked at me, he says, what the hell are you doing with this? I said, well, it's the only thing he had. He says, well, all right, we can try it. Bubba just, boom, right up in the air. First time Jim touched him with it. We didn't get the Combiotic in him because he broke the needle. We couldn't get him in. Neither one of us were quick enough to get that enormous old needle in. Jim said, I thought you knew better than use a needle like that. And I said, well, Jim, what am I supposed to use? Stick pin?
That's all he had.
That's all he had. So I guess it's better. He didn't have a fever or anything. So Mr. Lyons stood around. He says, y'all get him in the shade. He's out on the hill eating grass. He never did lose his appetite. Idiot horse. Even when he's sick, we can't save on the feed bill. He just eats away. But anyway, so we got him down the barn, finally. It took forever till we got a feed bucket and held it out in front of him. And let him cool off and kept him there till the vet came. Mr. Lyons says, well, if you can do it now, go ahead and just cut that hole open and let it drain. So Jim just got down there with his knife and cut it open, you know, where it's in the bottom of the foot, and it started draining, and we were lucky it wasn't deep, so it went ahead and drained out. So by the time the vet got there, there wasn't anything left to do except giving the antibiotics, and the vet said not to do that. He gave us iodine and said soak 3 or 4 hours a day, hot water and Epsom salt. And he said, sorry, I can't do anything more spectacular. He did, though. He says his bill. And that was spectacular.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You soaked his foot.
Yeah. You know what Mr. Weaver did with the cow and the... He said, if I knew you had as much time as you did when he saw our camp and saw we were just goofing around out there, he said I would have said 6 or 8 hours a day. So we'd get Bubba and we'd heat up 2 big pans of hot water and get a bucket and
Rick is this pretty good. I never saw anything like it. Let's try this chat.
Tell you what, let me turn this one around where I can't fidget at it.
Yeah. Anyway, we got
them shoes. He still hasn't broken. It just embarrasses me every time I look at it.
At least you can do is scum them up with sandpaper.
Breaks my heart.
We get 2 big pans of hot water and a bucket, and we bought those half-gallon things of Epsom salts, and we'd pour one in a bucket, and the warm water and some cold water, so you know, until we got his foot in it. The first time, both of us ended up just soaked from head to foot, because it didn't hurt him. He just would keep lifting it in and out and knock the bucket this way and he'd knock it that way. And you'd have to hold the bucket and hold his foot in it. And Jim would hold the bucket and I'd stand there with the food and just put it in a little handful at a time. One handful after, you know, just kind of sprinkling in so he'd have to lick a lot.
How many hours?
3 or 4 hours a day.
Gosh, yeah, 30
minutes.
We'd
start after breakfast and Bea would be fidgeting, you know, he wanted to get up to the barn. Jim would be there fooling with his horse. I said, Jim, we could put him in the horse trail, that way he couldn't move around so much, and I could, you know, just hold his foot in there and he wouldn't have to feed him. And he said, no, we'd do it this way. He'll be well in a couple of days. There he went, one handful after another. If I didn't put it in fast enough, Bob would look up, he'd look over at me. I put another handful in. And after the first time, he'd come right up. He'd come up three. He'd stay in the front pasture in the first place, and he'd watch. He'd watch anybody who came from the trailer to the shack. He, as soon as he saw you coming, zoom, he's at his feed trough. Just stand there and wait. He figured this is a pretty good deal. So that's what we did for about, I guess, 3 hours a day. We didn't quite make it 4 hours. Had put iodine in his foot with a syringe, and that's what was hard because it stung him just enough. Hold up, and he picked up a real cute little trick that every time he touched the tendon on his front leg to lift his foot up, he'd kick with his back foot. And just aim at you. And just as soon as you picked up, zoom, like that. So I about broke my hand on him one day because he tried it and I hit him. And just bam! Uh-huh. He put his ears back, he looked at me, and I started to pick his foot up again, and he kicked again, so I just bam! He didn't do it again until the next time we fed him. And he got Jim. Jim wasn't watching. And I said, Jim, he's kicking. I said, you better watch him. And Jim bent down. I wasn't watching that back leg. He picked the foot up, and Bubba was kicking. Just tapped him. You just hear this little thump, you know.
He just wasn't quite close enough to him.
Jim got a step back and he said, I don't think you better tell Mom and Dad about this. He said, go get the riding crop. So I got the riding crop and Jim picked it up. Of course, Bubba kicked. And Jim just let him have it, just as hard as he could hit him. And it took 3 times, and that was the end of it. Except we watched him for several days and still do.
Well, now, my idea is, and the horse is intelligent as that one is, your voice will do it.
Well, we tried that. I think our voice tends to be strident rather than firm. Now, with Jim, he can do it sometimes. But that kicking business, it kind of needed a fast cure, and the voice would have taken a while.
Well, now, the little filly was out there chasing the heifers. Of course, they were sort of bloody wise, bloody wise. And I spoke to her. And she quit.
Yeah.
I sort of said to myself, well, I spoke too loud. I didn't need to yell at the filly. There's one little, of course, she's very quick and sensitive. Yeah. She's the most sensitive animal I ever saw. Saw anything like that for me. It's hard to believe. You see, old Ajax, he was good natured, but he wasn't like this. Missy had her good points, you see, but nothing like this. So I don't know. Maybe she'd respond to the voice, not all of them would.
Brothers, he's pretty hard headed. Now, he will sometimes. Like, if you're riding him, and he decides that he's through working for the day, and you're not through, then you can sort of speak to him.
Yeah.
We have words pretty often, in fact. Then, you know, it's kind of a combination of words, and when I'm on him, I can be determined. When I'm on the ground underneath him, I'm not too determined.
Let me tell you, Suzanne, I didn't have a tape on this to do him. That little That little 6-year-old can report.
Yeah. I should've told you before I started. Do I go turn the tape on?
She's gonna get that.
I didn't know you'd just started.
That was the best.
Well, I'm off the sulfa now, so I'm beginning to feel better. That kind of helps. That's why I was so aggravated, everybody, I think. I'm not sure.
Well, I was expecting her to come in not to be able to talk above a whisper. This is the most pleasant surprise I've had.
We were down there just yesterday. We spent a day and a half solid with the cold, you see. Solid.
Yeah.
And we didn't know whether he was going to be there all the time or not. And yesterday, the cutest thing you ever saw is, you see, his nose swelled so he couldn't breathe. And a horse can't breathe through the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And he just gurgled, you see. Mm-hmm. And the way it turned out was he was pulling in through his nose and letting out through his mouth. We put, she was improving. And we put the Faye in. That was the middle of the afternoon. They weren't out here. The Helsons weren't out here. And we put that ice packs on again. And Faye held on one side and I had it on the other. And as she watched, her eyes would get sort of heavy and her head would go down. It brought that relief, you know, and it felt so good. And when she got there towards about supper time, or at least towards dark, Phyllis, and she had that bucket. And she hadn't had anything to eat all that time, you see.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't eat. Couldn't swallow. And the vet was afraid her goose would swell up to where she couldn't even. That right. And, you know, she had her. She was so hungry, she just stopped there, and she had her mouth in there, and she stopped looking over there to see what everybody's doing, and those little ears just sticking right up, you know. She didn't miss a thing. I just never saw her. And I don't know what I'm saying. But it's still not the animal for them, you see. All they'll have is trouble.
Yeah. They need something like Bubba. He's never going to be sick in his life except for little minor accidents like running into fences and nails. And
yeah, he's tough. Yeah. Well, this one will catch everything coming along.
Yeah.
Six years old.
He's 6 years old. He's the baby of the family. He's the youngest one, and he's ugly as he can be. He's got a round head and a little round face and a big nose like his daddy and his mama. All of them have the same nose. And a little busted brown haircut, you know, it's short back here and then from here on it just comes straight down to his eyebrows. You know? I heard him rattle the gate. They all come in this back gate. You know when they're coming because they bang it and rattle it and slam it back and forth. And he came up and he says, "Have you seen my brother?" I said, "No, which one?" He says, "Kenneth." I said, "I haven't seen Kenneth except for this morning," and then he left. He said, "Well," they all did the car. I said, "Have you looked over in Ronnie's barn?" He said, "No." He says, "But I guess he's over there. He's probably smoking." I said, "Oh, does Kenneth smoke?" He looked at me. He says, "Yes, he smokes everything he can get his hands on." He says, "When Mama buys cigarettes, she's got to hide them." And he looked at me again, and I kind of laughed because I knew he smoked cigars. And he said, "But I know where they are." He said he'd settle down for a stay, I guess, because he just kind of came over and Nell was inside, and I didn't want him running around loose, so I thought, "Oh, Lord, I have talk to a 6-year-old for an hour." So I didn't look forward to it because I can take Scotty about 15 minutes and I'm ready to pass him on to Jim. And he looked at there and he said, "There's a bee." It's a wasp. He looked up and got on the porch and he saw where he'd gone in the crack. He says, "You know how you can get rid of them?" I said, "No. How can you get rid of them?" He says, "Well, you get cotton and you stuff it in the cracks, and then you pour kerosene on it and you set fire to it, and the wasps just fly around inside there and they can't get out and they suffocate." I said, "Well, that's a pretty good thing to know, because we're going to have to tear it down and get those wasps out of here." He says, "Yes, they can sting." He says, "I've been stung by a scorpion, too." It's out of conversation. It just went one thing after another. You know, if he saw something, he'd look at it, and he glanced over, he saw the hickory tree over there, and he says, "My dad shot a snake over there a while ago." I said, "Well, he did." You know, I'm still talking to this little baby. He said, "Yeah, he was sitting right there where you are, and he just saw that snake over there, and he raised up his gun, and he shot him. He blew his head off, and the snake just went rolling down the hill, right down the hill." And that's when it hit me. He was talking.
He was
reporting.
It just came to you.
Yeah, I just that little motion as he showed the snake rolling down the hill. Like something Miss Chitty would do,
yeah.
Or Miss Daisy.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
He said, I said, how does that go down the hill? He said, "You just roll right down the hill."
Uh-huh. Right into life, right there.
He says, "Daddy had a bullet." He says, "It's this big." He says, "He shoots lots of things at that." I said, "Yeah, I heard he shot some dogs around here." And he says, "Yes, he said the other day he saw this dog and he's chasing one of her chickens." He said, "I'll be goddamned if that dog's going to get my chicken." Boom! He said, "Blew the dog's head off." So, from there we went, since he's talking about chickens, he remembered this game chicken that they had, a rooster that killed a snake. He'd seen this chicken out there just flapping up and down there. He said, "Just jump and jump and jump." Squawk, and he went out there to see what was going on, and the chicken was jumping at a snake. So he said, "I went and got Dwight. And Dwight caught the snake and the chicken and put them in the pen together." They catch rattlesnakes, and they caught two copperheads in our creek, took them home and played with. And put rattlesnakes in the teacher's drawer one time. Dwight said she didn't do nothing but run out of the room and scream. I don't know how true that is or not, but he said Dwight put this chicken and the snake in there together, and that chicken tore the snake apart. And just tore it all up. And he says, "I had a cobra one time." And just for a while, it was just one thing after another. And every once in a while, he'd stop and watch the bee. Just watch. He said, "There's another one." And he'd go and he'd look, see where he'd crawled in the hole. And he'd say, "Where do you suppose it's coming out?" He went around the corner to see if he'd see where they're coming out. And while he's around there, he saw this, I guess it's the meter, like on the electricity. It's clear and it's sort of a switch box. Anyway, your power feeds into the house.
Yeah, there. Yeah. Junction or something like
he
that.
He says, "You ever see what happened when one of them hickeys explodes? Everything's a hickey, a snake or a step or a wagon or a switch box or a tree or it's a hickey." He says, "You ever seen one of them hickeys explode?" And I said, "No, I hadn't." I knew something was coming up here. He says, "Well," he says, "my aunt had one on her house, and she got her brother was supposed to come and fix it, do something about it." And he says, I was visiting over there, and he asked me, he said, "Now, you take the red wire," and he held them, "you take the green wire, and the red wire goes here, and the green wire goes here." And Douglas looked at me, and he says, "But I put the green wire here and the red wire here."
Oh.
He said, "And it just went all up in there." Kabloom! He said, "And I started running. It scared me so bad. And there's my uncle. He just lying down on the ground. Just clunk. just knocked him flat. Boom!" The boy said, "He got up." He said, "They said it blew every light in the house. You know, it made the light bulbs explode." I said, "Well, I guess there's some commotion then." I said, "Did your uncle cuss a lot?" He said, "No, he's just lying on the ground." Do that. He He said, but my aunt did. I said, what else did your aunt do? I said, how come they let you do that? He said, well, I was the only one there. He said, you know what my aunt did to me? He said, she didn't use a hairbrush. She didn't use one of those hickeys over there, one of them, you know. I said, a hickory switch? He said, yeah, a hickory switch. And she used a baseball bat.
Oh.
And she said, he said, the reason she was so mad is because she had to get to the hospital to have a baby. I thought, oh, no. And this got into something that Nell overheard this. Well, she overheard all of it, but this tickled her the most. I think, I don't know what he was talking about. He wasn't clear. He said something. She was taking some kind of, you know, and I didn't get the word. So I said, she was what? And he said, don't you know what that is? Is it some kind of medicine or pill? I said, no. I meant, you say it over again. I didn't understand you. And he thought that I'd hurt him, but didn't know what he was talking about. He looked at me. He says, you don't know what that is? I said, no. Well, I'll just play along. He says, well, it's got two numbers. It's got a 1 and a 2 on the front and a 3 and a 4 on the back. Well, I said, well, you mean you cut it in half and take it? He says, he looked at me, he moved around the corner, and he bent his elbows down the porch, and he looked at me. He says, you still don't know what I mean? I said, no. He says, well, I guess I'll have to say it. I still don't know what he means. I'm thinking it. He said it's something about she's supposed to take it not to have the baby. So I don't know whether it's abortion or birth control pills. I'm not sure he does either, but she was supposed to be on her way to the hospital, and that's why she got so mad. Switchbox blew up. Her uncle couldn't drive her to the hospital because he's down on the ground, out cold.
And he figured you ought to know what this pill was.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He just couldn't understand that I didn't know what he's talking about. And I still don't know. I didn't hear what he said. If I'd heard that, I would have been okay. And then he got on to something about demons. And I thought, oh my, this is something he's got from his mother. You know, real demons getting in you. But he just meant monster movies because his brother's taking all the... They go to the movie in town and stay through as many features as are being shown. You know, one after another. They saw Dirty Harry 4 times. Smoking all the time. They didn't see much in the movie, you know. They go out in the lobby or upstairs and smoke. Go in the bathroom and just, cut your way through the fumes. All these little kids running around. Then he talked about, about his, the chicken and the snake business is what his father told me about the next day. He told me that one, too. And he talked about some cobras. He said he used to have a cobra. And this is where it began to dawn on me. A lot of the stuff he was telling me that he didn't know himself. It was something Dwight had told him, or Kenneth, or Daryl, or a story that his father or mother had told him. And we moved around back, and he saw the well, and he said, he started talking about when the well was drilled. He says, I was over here. And you don't know whether he was there or not. He says he was. But some of the things that he told me could have happened before. His brothers, that's why they always knock him in the arm, said, you don't know what you're talking about. You weren't even there. But it's just, it's a story that he's heard I don't know how many times, so he can tell it too. But he said, a big old fat man, he says, I can't remember his name. That's just like, a grown-up just trying to recall somebody's name. He says, but he lived in Canton, or Ball Ground, 10 miles apart. He says, and they were drilling this well out, and they got down, and they hit rock. He says, and the bit broke, but they didn't know it was broke. So they just kept on drilling, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. He said, and then that old fat guy who was running it, he finally got him to bring the drill up, and he looked at it, and he says, well, I mean, goddamn, it's broke. And then Kenneth came wheeling up on his bicycle. The bicycle they're riding now, Kenneth swipes it from Dwight's bike. It doesn't have a bolt in the steering, you know, the handlebars,
oh.
So they just lift out. And they go tearing around the pass, you know, they come down out of the trees at 90 miles an hour and swirl, you know, or flip it up. And every time they flip it up, they forget, and the handlebars just fly out and they clonk around their back. It's crazy.
I had a bicycle once that did that. That's something.
Kind of helpless feeling, isn't it?
Well, Kenneth came over and he said, Douglas, Mama's looking for you. And so Douglas said, well, okay. And he said, you mind? Kenneth teased him about talking to his girlfriend.
You?
Yeah. And Nell came out and she was just laughing. She said she hadn't come out because she didn't want to come out while he was talking to you. And she just laughed and laughed and laughed. She said he couldn't understand why he didn't know what he's talking about, could he? I guess I'll have to tell you. But Kenneth is, he's 11. And he's, Nell and I were sitting down in the front of the shack. It was about 8:30, I guess. You know, getting pretty dark, sorry. And Kenneth was zooming up and down the street in front. He'd get up the top of the hill, and he'd come down, and there's a dip, and he'd hit that, and he'd throw his arms up and see what the bicycle would do, you know, whether it'd fall over or just go on. And finally, he rode on around. He came in the gate, and he parked out in front of us. He said, you see me riding with no hands? And I said, yeah, I saw you. Looked like you were going to kill yourself. He said, well, I might one day. He just grins. You know, he's blonde head too, and he rears his bicycle back and forth up like that. He says, when I was 7, I got me a brand new bicycle. He said it was a 3-speed bicycle Daddy bought me. He says, and Dwight and Daryl said I couldn't jump. You see that ditch down there? They said I couldn't jump that. So he got up to the top of Ronnie's hill. It's like the road comes down this way, and there's another one crosses this way. And it's a hill. It's one of those long, you know, you just keep climbing all the way up. So he got about a quarter mile up that hill and started down. Just pedaling faster and faster and faster and shifting gears, you know, to go even faster. Came around the corner and he headed for the ditch, and they rigged up a jump, you know, so they could come right up to the edge of it and jump over.
Uh-huh.
He went up there, he said, but I shifted the gears wrong.
Oh.
No, it was, he hit the brake wrong, that's what it was. He had to hit a certain brake to get it to fly right. And he said it went right up in the air and come back just like that. He said, you see these two things back here, you know, those heavy bars that hold them. The wheel come down,
yeah,
to this.
Yeah.
He said they meant just like that.
Oh.
He said it tore that bike up so bad. He said I landed on my back and it kind of hurt that a little bit. He said, but one of the handlebars busted off, and of course it tore the wheel up and bent the spokes, you know, those braces out and twisted them. Now I said, you just got it for your birthday? He said, yeah, it's a day old. He said, you know how come I come to do that? And I said, no, I can't imagine. He says, I want to be like Evel Knievel. Well, now she knew who Evel Knievel was, and I did too, just by happen chance. And we just died. Because, you know, here's a 7-year-old boy trying to be like Evel Knievel. He'd seen him in Atlanta do stunts, you know, just not too long before that. And so naturally, he being completely idiotic, he had to try it too. Just zooms. He said, so we took the bicycle back in, and the guy gave him a second-hand bike. You know, he took the remains and didn't want to replace it. He says, but I tore that one up too. He did the same thing again. He tried to jump the ditch, and the same thing happened. He landed on his back and tore the bike up. So Dwight's kind of careful when he lets Kenneth ride his bike. He's the one who lost the bolt to the handlebars, so they slip out. He said, we went into town, and I told Mama, I said, I want to tell the newspaper about it, about me wanting to be Evel Knievel and all. So she gave him $1.69, and He went in and saw the editor and told him about what had happened and how come he'd done it, because he wanted to be like Evel Knievel. The man printed the story in the newspaper. He took it to school, showed all his friends and his aunts and his uncles. He said, I had it in my drawer until about a year ago. He said, and then Douglas got it.
He wanted to go report on it.
Yeah, he did. He went to the newspaper. Neil said, well, when did you start all this? He says, well, I don't know. He says, we used to have a swimming pool with a metal rim, you know, one of those big kinds. And he says, and I'd get up in the swing and swing over it. And he said, and jump out of the swing and land in the pool. He said, but one time I hit the edge and just scraped along my back. He said, Mama drug me in the house and she poured alcohol over there and I screamed and screamed. He said, Mommy killing me. I just imagine Mother says, Shopper, I will kill you. Dump the alcohol on. I said, what, you ever broke anything? He looked at me, you know, like, what have I been telling you all this for? I said, I mean, you know, any bones? He said, no. He said, Evel Knievel's broken every bone in his body. He said, I haven't broken any. I saw his mother about 2 days later, and they were, they were raising Cain out on the porch. Just all the boys and Barbara were out there, and they had a wagon and a bicycle and a big plastic three-wheel thing that you sit. Douglas would sit down low, and the wheel would be high, and you pedal the wheel on it. And on this old wooden porch with the slats loose, it sounded like a train. We couldn't figure out for days what was going on over there. You'd hear this, and this, they'd scream and yell and cuss at each other, and all of a sudden you hear this, we thought they were running the wagon off the porch or something. So they were out there, and I said, you think they'll live to grow up? And she looked at me. She said, I expect so. She said, I was there that way when I was a girl. He said, and I lived. But she talked, when she came over that night and talked, she said, my God, I think I'm going to have a nervous breakdown one of these days. She said, my daughter comes over, my daughter's separated, she's got a little 3-year-old baby. She comes over every day after lunch, she said, and she don't even help me can the beans. She just comes over and sits. She said, and Wayne's separated from his wife, and she lives right down the road, and she's all the time calling and seeing how Wayne is and coming up to visit. She said, I don't have anything against her, but I just get tired of her coming up all the time. And she says, I'm going crazy with all those kids over there. They won't eat beans, and they won't eat okra, and they won't eat something else. And she said, got all this food, and they won't eat a bit of it. They eat walnuts. That's all they eat is walnuts. She said, I got Chuck to take me to the doctor. Dr. Roper, the one I went to, who is he's another story. It's an enamel pan. Anyway, she said, I went to him, and I said, Dr. Roper, those kids are driving me crazy. She said, I just can't stand it. He said, would you like me to send you to Milledgeville? She said, yeah, maybe I can draw those old ladies over there out or something. She said, they just sit and talk to the purses and carry them around all the time. She said, I can sit and mumble with the best of them. You can go in Milledgeville and mumble. So she said, and Dr. Roper gave her some medicine. She's in the hospital. Wayne says every 2 weeks she goes on vacation. Goes to the hospital. Dr. Roper gives her nerve pills, I guess, and she says, I just go raving through the house. I just yell and cuss and scream, and not one of them pays a bit of attention to me. She said, I just scream on. She says, I don't care whether they pay attention or not. If I want to scream at them, I'll scream at them. She says, every once in a while, Chuck says, if you don't shut up, I'm going to put a box on your mouth. She says, tickles her so bad, she has to go sit down and laugh. And she gets up and screams some more. you know, they're Betty and Charlie. Now, Betty got real bad tickle, and Nell and I were just sitting there. We were just dying, you know, because we couldn't even say anything back to her because we were laughing so hard the way she just run on and on and on. And
she was
just
sitting
out of the
there
blue.
On the bridge.
Yeah,
there.
Well, she stood on the bridge a while, and then they got a chair, and she sat down. She said, no, I can't stay, and sat down. And Douglas got up in her lap. She just talked and talked and talked, and she said she'd take Douglas into town to buy him some school shoes. And when I'd been over there the day before, he'd come out and show me his shoes. Carried them out. Brought Ken's out, too, show me those. Anyway, she said he wanted a pair of boots. She said, but they were three sizes too big for him. She said, I wasn't about to come home with those boots. Now, Chuck, he said he'd buy him the boots just to shut him up. Said, but I told the sales lady, I'm not buying that boy boots three sizes too big. And she said, Douglas just kept fussing at me and whining about it, and I just clucked him. Pop, right there in the store, just bonk. She could do it, too. And she said, I got home, and I was fixing stuff in the kitchen, and Douglas came to the door, and he said, Mama, you ain't got a bit of sense. She said, well, what do you mean? How come I don't have a business? She said, I knew he's going to fuss at me again. He said, you haven't got a... You just clunked me right there in the store, and that sales lady's going to think you haven't got any sense at all. It just went on and on about vegetables. And now, I like a good bean now, a good mess of cabbage or a good mess of greens. She said, but them kids don't like anything. She said, they haven't got any sense. They won't eat anything but ice cream. And she said, she got on to Ronnie, the fellow who's building across from us. And she said, I've about had enough of Ronnie. She said, he came out there the other day, watched me in the garden. She's planting onions. And he says, are you planting those or pulling them up? And she said, I'm planting them. He says, well, don't you plant a seed? He said, I didn't know onions grew in the ground like that. And she said, she looked at him, she said, well, where the hell do you think they come from? Now, the grocery store? She said, but then without a pause, you know, where the hell do you think they come from, out of a grocery store? But then I didn't think he had any sense anyway. I knew he wouldn't know where they just without giving anybody a chance to laugh or anything, just ride on. And she said, those kids of mine didn't know an egg came from a chicken. Because they lived in town and then moved out there 5 years ago.
Oh.
This went on and on, and we were all just laughing. We couldn't stop. And finally, she got up and said, well, she had to go. So I walked up to the gate with her, and we talked another 30 minutes, I think. Must have been that long. Douglas kept banging on the gate, pushing it back and forth. And said, Mama, let's go home. Mama, let's go home. She kept talking about Wayne and his wife and all sorts of stuff. Now she's going to have a nervous breakdown.
Now you was up there when the papa was out on the porch swinging.
Yeah, that's when they were, Douglas had his look, Daddy, I got a motorcycle, you know, and he'd zoom back and forth on the porch. And Faye had come over with me. Dwight had dragged home a kitten. Heaven only knows where he finds these things, you know, just dogs and kittens and snakes, and he brings them all home. And the kitten had gotten over to our house, our place, somehow or other. I don't think it was an accident either. And Faye and I carried it back that night, and we sat out on the porch with him and just tried to talk. It wasn't too easy, but he's a carpenter. He works on Ronnie's house, and he handles the cattle and the land, you know, cutting the grass and everything in order to work off their rent for that house, because it's on Ronnie's land. And I think about the only thing he told me about that chicken killing the snake. I think that's the one. I was rattled too. Noise going back and forth. But he talks like Douglas, it's not the same run-on kind of thing as his wife does, but it's, you know, it's the recording. He's telling me there's a panther that's supposed to roam the hills around there. And he says it's, and not many people have seen it, except you can see its tracks quite a bit, and, you know, some signs, and you can hear it now and then. He said he'd been hunting it one time, but it was so noisy, I don't even remember much of what he's talking about. We weren't there too long. Because actually, Mrs. Hobart wasn't talking. He'd be talking along and off to the side. They're sitting on the swing, you know, just one of those porch swings hanging down. He'd be talking about this groundhog that he tried to kill. And she said it looked like a little bear sitting up there. It's a real big female groundhog. He hadn't found it yet. But the whole time, here's this other conversation just rattling along. Whether there's an audience or not, she just kept on going. I was trying to listen to him, and she's talking about something. I didn't know what.
You kept on going?
Not both of them at the same time.
Not both of them.
Well, they were talking about different things. You know, if they'd both been on the same topic, I could have done it. But
doesn't track.
You know, it was the funniest thing. You know, here's this Mr. Hobart, kind of slow and deliberate. And
well, both of them sitting in the swing.
Yeah. And finally, they got Douglas slowed down. He crawled up in his daddy's lap. And both of them in the swing, just talking away.
Well, now, Douglas is a 6-year-old.
He's a 6-year-old. Kenneth is 11.
Now, is Kenneth the one that hurt his head?
No, Dwight's the one. Dwight is the next one up. He's about 13 or 14. And Mrs. Lyon said that he got hit by a car when he's little, and supposedly he can't learn much in school. I mean, he just doesn't have the intellect, and he's supposed to be kind of stunted in his growth. Well, he's not any bigger than Kenneth. He's, you know, 3 years younger. And supposedly he's not supposed to have much sense. And Bew just, you know, he likes Dwight to come around. They call him, his nickname is Poochie Doo Doo. They've all got nicknames. One's called Mouse and one's called Squeak, and this one's Poochie Doo Doo, and I don't know what they call Douglas. Anyway, they call him Poochie most of the time. We call him Dwight. He comes over on his bicycle, and he came up, Nell said that it was the first time I hadn't been paying much attention to him. And she said, you know, that Dwight, he's got a lot of sense. She said, he knows all sorts of things about animals and all. And he's down there talking to me, and she said, did you know this? She said, quail, baby quail, can just eat just like baby chickens do. And she hadn't known it. And Dwight had watched them. And he told her about, if the quail, you know, in the nest, the mother will tell the babies to be still, and you can walk right on top of them just about. They won't move. He said you can pick them up in your hand and hold them, and they won't move a feather. They'll just lie there like they're supposed to, unless mama comes and takes them to get something to eat. And she said he's telling me about every time he caught a snake, he'd go home and he'd look in this book he had and see what kind of snake it was. And she said, he told her, he said, if you get up real early in the morning, he said, you can see deer around here. He says, they come out of Ronnie's woods across the road and jump the fence into y'all's land, and you can watch and see them. She said, he watches all sorts of things. She said, he's got a lot of sense. So I started listening to him, and I'd be darned if he doesn't. You know, just. And he comes up on his bicycle, and he says, y'all got any more good trails where I can ride? So we'll say, well, yeah, you can go around, you know, up by the barn around the apple trees. You can go in the second pasture or back on past into the woods. Or, you know, and he'll ride for a while, and he'll come back, and he'll say, well, thank you, and off he goes again. And he's the one that told me those apples were okay to eat. Well, Rick doesn't think so. you just don't know a good apple, Rick.
You mean you brought some apples?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, little hard green things.
They're so good to cook.
Mm. Are we cooking apples?
I guess they are. I like to eat them just
kind of
like
a dry, grainy taste.
Well, they're old. They're real ancient. Nobody's taken care of them in 100 years or so. And,
oh, yeah.
When we first tried them, they were bitter, just sour, bitter, bitter things. And I saw Dwight eating one. I said, "Where'd you get that apple?" He said, "Back there in the second pasture." So I walked back there with him, and he showed me the tree and pulled a couple off, and we sat there eating apples. I think we must have both of us eaten about three.
Sitting
there.
Whew. Well, they weren't bitter.
No, they, well, they're sour, but they've got, to me, just enough of a sweet taste to be okay. And I like them. I'd like them a little sweeter, but I'll eat them that way. And I've been dying for fruit because they don't buy it. It's so expensive, and you've got five people to eat it. And I went to the store one day and bought six plums and ate them before I got home. So when I found those apples were, you know, edible, I just started stuffing myself. Got Jim to help me pull them off the tree.
Well, now, where does Butte?
Well, Butte, Dwight comes up to the barn and helps. I mean, until we got the tent on, that place was just perfect for him because he climbed all over it. And all it was the studs and the purloin, you know, the rafters. He was all over it. And he'd help. You know, he'd pass boards and things and talk the whole time. Well, he doesn't talk as much as the others. He's a little more quiet. And, if you ask him something, he'll think a while and he'll sort of, yes, no. And he'll give it some thought before he tells you. And that's what Butte likes. He's a tickler. He'd sit there at supper table and Butte will imitate him. He'll say, yes. He says, I believe I know him. And the others, Butte makes him a little nervous. Like, he hired Daryl to cut the pasture. He paid Ronnie the year before to cut all the pasture. And I think he paid him I forgot how it went, but had something to do with $7. Because he's paying for the tractor and then for Ronnie's time.
Yeah.
So he told Daryl, he said, if you'll cut this front pasture and the one back there, he said, it shouldn't take you more than an hour, should it? He says, I'll give you $6. And poor Daryl's up there. It took him an hour to cut the first pasture because you just can't cut fast when you got terraces and stuff and rocks all over the place. So Daryl hadn't been back to cut our pastures anymore. I don't think the pay was quite what he expected. But Kenneth makes him nervous because Kenneth is just wild. And he likes Douglas. Douglas isn't there much, so he likes Dwight because he knows all about these animals and things.
But Kenneth makes him nervous.
Kenneth makes him nervous because he's loud. If he's on any sort of thing that's got wheels, you know, it's just as fast as he can go, whether it's Douglas's wagon or Dwight's bicycle. You know, he just roars up. He'll come tearing up behind Bubba at times, you know, without even thinking that Bubba's likely to whirl around and kick him or something. He just comes zooming down the hill, you know, and Bubba just throw up his head and take off. It just scares him, you know. He never knows when he's coming. And Kenneth is likely to take a hammer up there by the barn and just start knocking on something.
Oh. You know,
it doesn't matter what he knocks down, just so long as he knocks down something. Mrs. Overt said she used to have a bicycle on the summers, but she said that mean Ken, if he don't wreck it, he takes a hammer to it.
Now, Kenneth is the one who had the new bike. And
he's the one who wrecked the new bike, just demolish it. We've got the remains of one of their bikes in our trash heap. All that's left is sort of the main body part. And, you know, the wheel we found down in the creek. Rusted out. I think it's real. And that's Kenneth's.
Well, it looks like your place over there was their territory.
It was. That's why they come over. Partly why they come over so much. And it doesn't bother me, and it doesn't really bother Bew, as long as they, you know, he says, you know, it's maybe not a good idea to leave our purses out or something, because he said it'd be hard for any kid to resist, you know, if something's lying out there to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, lumber and hammers and things like that. Just, and he doesn't think they'll do it just to be stealing or anything. He just soon not leave it out. But he lets them, they just come in, ride their bicycle, or visit, anything. And Dwight stays down there by the chickens for 30 minutes at a time. And just feed him. He'd go in the creek and catch frogs, little tiny frogs, and then he'd hold the frog up by one leg where the chickens can get it, and, you know, and just watch chickens just and go to the frog. And he'd go back to the creek and he'd catch another frog or a snake or a crocodile. He'd sit and watch chickens.
But he doesn't learn in school.
He doesn't learn in school. He likes fish frying. The high school has a neat system. They catch kids fighting during school or after school. They bring them inside and put a pair of boxing gloves on their hand and make them fight. And they make them fight till one of them has lost. They can't just quit and say, I'm through. You've got to fight till, you know, your nose is bloody or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
oh, don't tell me.
Yeah. They make them fight it out. I mean, Dwight says you can't say you're quitting. He says you got to finish the fight till one of them's won. One way or the other. He says, but I don't like the boxing gloves. You can't hurt somebody bad enough without them. With the, you know, I just bare knuckles.
Now, Ronnie has his connection?
Well, Ronnie owns, see, Mr. Hobart's sister's husband, that's Mr. Cowart, owned all that land,
yeah.
Or bought it. It's called the Daily Land, but Mr. Cowart bought it, and this guy Knight. And
his brother-in-law.
His brother-in-law, yeah. So Ronnie bought first 30 acres.
Now, he's not the one you borrowed the needle from?
No, that's another. I didn't, he was going to revive. All he did was give me the medicine, the needle, and take off. Ronnie bought the 30 acres, and then he bought all the rest of the land, about 150 acres, I guess.
Oh, is Ronnie the capitalist?
He's in the finance business. It's Cowart that's the money maker. He's the one who owned the land and sold it. And Ronnie's falling back on his payments or something anyway. They're pretty sure he's going to lose that 150 acres. Because you know what he did? He bought the land and he started putting up this house for his uncle.
Yeah.
And the house has run him up to about $30,000 because he hired the Hobarts to put the foundation in, and they put it on rock, and the rock settled, and had to redo it. And he started buying new equipment, you know, this fantastic fence, like Bew had put in, you know, only all around his land. He bought a new diesel tractor, a great big huge thing. He bought two bulls, and all his purebred Angus stuff, and just money after money, just started pouring it into it. I guess he has. He works for a finance company. That's all I know about it. As far as I guess, he just invested and he had some, you know, had the money.
Now, what's Ronnie's connection?
Well, he's just our neighbor. Oh, well, the Hobarts, in order to stay in this house that they're in, that's on the land, Mr. Hobart has, you know, lived in all his life, just about. They take care of the cattle and the pasture and everything.
For Ronnie.
Ronnie, yeah. And help him out the house.
Now, Ronnie, whose age is he?
Ronnie's about 30, maybe about 40, I guess. He's the kind of man, the little I've seen of him, he ain't got a grain of sense. And when they told him that the house's foundation, that they'd hit rock and couldn't go any further, and putting the foundation in, Nell said he's the kind of say, well, it's on rock, it must be okay. Let it go. And he wouldn't look into seeing whether you ought to build, put a foundation on rock like that. And he just they don't think he has any sense. Not one in that family. Not even Douglas. Douglas says that, Ronnie. You know? It's like Miss Mary says that sap sucker. I don't think any of them think he's got any sense. And Mrs. Hobart doesn't, if he doesn't know an onion grows in the ground. And they're pretty sure he's going to lose the land because he's run into money trouble and he can't pay for it. And they said, anybody know you pour money into something and without getting it back, you're gonna hit an end sometime. Right?
Mm-hmm. He doesn't have much coming in, probably.
Not now, he doesn't. I think he hit some kind of snag.
Well,
so.
that'll make put Bew into the finance business. I imagine 18 acres is all he wants.
Yeah. And I think it's all he wants, but I don't know. If he starts looking over there at Ronnie's cattle, he might decide, well, 30 acres would be nice. If he could get it, I really don't know. If he could get it at a good price, he might buy it, just as an investment. I'm better not talk about Bew yet.
No.
Well, the Jackson.
Well, is this your first easy day?
No, not really. I got off the sulfa about Saturday, I guess. I ran out of it. And he said, I'd gone in Friday, and he said, well, then, you know, everything's cleared up, so you can probably quit now. I said, well, thank goodness. And so, I guess Monday, I guess, I started feeling better.
Oh, when you left.
Yeah.
So since you've been on the road, you felt all right.
Yeah, especially, well, Monday morning, we were trying to get to Jim's interview at 2 o'clock. We left at 6:30, and we thought, you know, we'll probably have at least a half hour, an hour to spare to find the place. Well, we had we were zooming along, and the retread on the front, started flapping, you know, so we got out and Jim had to change the tire. Well, Bew had put in this old jack.
Yeah.
And the spare tire, instead of being in the truck, is hooked onto this thing underneath.
Oh, yeah.
There was Jim in his nice suit pants, you know, and his nice shirt. And I said, well, take the shirt off, please. I go make him take his pants off.
Yeah,
I think you do that alongside the interstate. He spread out a tarp under there, and sure enough, the jack wouldn't come up far enough so he could take the weight off the tire to unscrew the bolt. So he had to get a rope and tie it up so it wouldn't drop down.
Well, let me tell you, that's commonplace.
Yeah, anyway.
The doctor.
Oh, Dr. Roper. I knew I was coming down with this thing. Well, as soon as I got back. Yeah. Well, I had it. I knew the symptoms. So I thought, well.
Did you start off with a fever?
No, I just start off with, well, my back aches.
Yeah.
And
I start off with a fever, don't I say?
Uh-huh. Mine doesn't get quite that bad usually. It did this time because I couldn't find a doctor. So in Canton, they said, don't bother to go in because they won't see you. So we asked, Mrs. Hobart had told Nell there was a clinic in Jasper. I thought, well, a clinic is just where you go in. Anybody can go in without an appointment. You just sit there until the doctor sees you. So I went there and went to the hospital to find out where the clinic was. We didn't know where anything was. She gave me directions. She said, try Dr. Roper or Dr. Perrone. So I went and I found Dr. Roper. Yeah. And the nurse was there, was dried up prune. She wasn't happy to see me. She said you'll have to pay cash, you know. I can pay cash.
Susan, you mean you just flaunted your wealth at
the well, I didn't have much choice. I said, yeah, I can pay cash. She says, well, why don't you go out and see if Dr. Perrone is in? Well, okay. She said, Dr. Roper's going to lunch, and he won't be back till 2. And I'd gotten there at 11:30. So, okay. So I went down to see Dr. Perrone. He was out for the day. It was his day off. So I came back and I said, well, if Dr. Rope will see me, you know, I'll just wait. And she said, okay. So I went and got something to eat and went to the library and sat until 1:30 and came back. And there were three whole people in the waiting room. It's an old house. It's just a house. It's been made into an office. And he runs a nursing home. It's in the back, and you can see all these, you know, the old women coming up and down, pattering up and down the hall, and these nurses running back and forth. And she said, well, just, you know, have a seat. And so one lady went in, and she's in there 5 minutes, and out she came. Another lady went in, and she's in there about 10 minutes, and out she came. And when she said, well, all right, you can go on in now. And she came in, took my car to the rover. And he's about 65, I guess. Maybe 60, I guess. And he's kind of stocky and gray-haired. He's got the examining table in the same room with his desk. It's just a big, great, big, huge room. You know, and the table's over here, and there's all these pictures of Tennessee walking horses and trotting horses on the wall. Dr. Roper sits over here, and I said, I think I know what I have. I've had it before, and I told him the symptoms and all. He said, well, did you bring in a specimen? I said, no, we're kind of short on facilities. So he said, well, come on in here. And we walked in there, and he had this tray, and had about 20 of these little whitey nails. The round pans, you know, with the black around the edge. And he just handed me one and showed me the bathroom. There's a cigarette button. So I walked back out and handed it back. And he said, and he came back and he got the nurse to look at it. And he looked at it and he came back. And he says, well, you got a mess there. I kind of thought so. I'm dying. Every 5 minutes I run out in the bushes. So he gave me a prescription and said, come back in a week. And that was it. I don't think it could have taken more than 5 minutes at the most. And it took longer because I asked him about the horses. You know, see, it tickled me. He looked like a country doctor who's used to handling people who don't even know a needle from anything else in the world, you know. He just sort of hands him the medicine and says, go get it and come back, and that's all. And so I went to he charged me $4, is all, for an office visit.
Good Lord. And the
test, that's all it was $4.
Everywhere else I know, it's $8 just to step inside the
door.
Well,
the vet cost $6 to come in and sit down.
Yeah.
And so it's $4. The medicine cost $6. Well, that's good. It was sulfur.
He was leisurely?
Yeah, he was brusque, is what he was, and sort of sharp. But the way Mrs. Hulbert talks about him is that he's real friendly and jokes with it all. And I think it could be because, you know, he knows her. She's been taking her kids to him for 5 years. And herself. Oftener. And he didn't know me, but I think probably if he went in several times, he'd start sort of talking to me. But I never had to wait more than 15 minutes. And I went back 3 times.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. like I say, it didn't get cleared up until last Saturday, Friday.
Oh, you mean you've been on that medicine? You had to refill your prescription?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. You went back.
Yeah, I went back. Yeah. He handed me the pad again. Said, well, bring another specimen. He said, you still got kind of a mess here. And he wrote out.